The content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Great companies like Sun Warrior, the pioneers of plant-based protein. From the sun to the plant to you, go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all the products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Enviromedica, makers of Terraflora, a novel broad-spectrum symbiotic combining spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Find Terraflora and the full line of products at enviromedica.com. Castor and Pollux, the new standard in pet food, the only complete line of USDA organically certified pet food. Crazy Water, infused by Mother Nature, not some random factory. Paleo Magazine, now all digital. Go to paleomagazine.com to subscribe. The Wellbeing Journal, Veg World Magazine, the International Society of Sports Nutrition, and Thorne Research. Visit our dispensary at oneliferadio.com for 20% off and free shipping. You can find more information on all of our sponsors, including links to listener discounts, on the oneliferadio.com sponsor page. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
To One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior, and we are broadcasting live on iHeartMedia as well as KMET in Southern California. How is everybody doing today? Junior, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I had a whole day of football yesterday. I'm fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's another story for me.
I know. The boys lost.
Oh, it's horrible. We beat ourselves again.
I know. I'm a Browns fan because my mother's family was from Ohio and from Cleveland, and my grandfather was educated at Case Western University, a medical doctor. And so I have you just can't take that, it's kind of like blood is thicker than water. Once you're like associated with a town or a city, it's hard to walk away, and just forget about it.
I get it. But man, that was rough.
It was rough for the Cowboys. But football, that's what I love about football, because it's like life. Sometimes you're going to win. Sometimes you're going to lose. And you have to be... you have to maintain your integrity and your class and your, what are some other things that you have to maintain through hard times, Junior?
In sports, your sportsmanship, your composure.
Yes.
I mean, you just have to, I know you still just have to keep moving on, but
yeah.
It's been like 20 years for us. Like, come on.
Yeah, no, I know. Hey, I'm a Bills fan. Okay?
Yeah, no, yeah, you get it too.
And they won yesterday. They're 4-0.
I know, that's great.
I know. Josh Allen, he's doing a really great job.
Yes.
I don't like his mustache, though. It looks like a creepy guy from the 80s or the 70s or something.
I think you either
right?
just got to get the beard or just don't do anything.
Oh, man. Yeah, the mustache has got to go. If I'm going to, I just like, whoa, Josh, I'm going to send him an email. But we've got a great show today. And I love that you're so positive, because we all need that in this thing called life,
mm-hmm.
or football, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But, we've got a fantastic show today. We do. We've got Dr. Nasha Winters coming up here in just a second. I'm going to introduce her. And then we have Dr. Steve Schwartz at the half. We're going to be talking about the recent COVID developments and research findings. And it's always good with Dr. Steve and Dr. Nasha Winters. Let me introduce her. She is a naturopathic integrative oncologist and a fellow of the American Board of Naturopathic Oncology. And she has been on a personal journey with cancer for almost 29 years now. Her quest to save her own life has transformed into a lifelong mission to support others on a similar journey. Dr. Nasha travels the world helping colleagues master the metabolic approach to cancer so their patients can achieve better treatment outcomes. She is the co-author of the book, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, Integrating Deep Nutrition, The Ketogenic Diet, and Non-Toxic Bio-Individualized Therapies. Her website is drnasha.com. That's NASA. Such a pleasure to have you back. How are you doing today?
Oh, good, Bernadette. It's great to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's great. I haven't seen you since the Weston Price symposium that was here in Dallas.
Exactly. It's been almost a year.
I know. Time flies when you're having COVID, right?
Right. Time flies when you're having COVID. That's a great statement.
Oh, my gosh. Well, your personal story is incredible. It is. And that is why, you know, you are with us today to talk about strategies to increase the quality and quantity of your personal shelf life, a.k.a. longevity. So let's dive into this. So I saw a recent statistic that really surprised me. And so is it true that the survival rate is going down rather than increasing? And why is this happening, Dr. Nasha?
You know, and it's sad that you stumbled across that study, but it's actually really well, articulated in the scientific and medical community. We've actually been dropping our life expectancy for the last several years in a row here in the United States. So since 2014, though, according to the Medical Association, so the American Medical Association is a pretty conservative group there, they actually say that our life expectancy, life expectancy began to slow down in the 1980s. So this has been coming for several decades. It's picking up momentum now. And compared to other developed nations, we go against the grain of what's happening elsewhere. Everybody else is improving or at least stable with their longevity, but not so here in the United States. In fact, we've decreased our relative mortality among our young and middle-aged adults more than anywhere in the world. So we can't blame it on, oh, we're just all so healthy that we're living longer and therefore more of us die. No, that's not it. It's crazy. And so what they're calling this is the age of despair. And the two things that are taking our lives and changing our life expectancy are drugs, overdose, specifically the opiate crisis.
Oh, wow.
And the other one is suicide. And what gives me the chills is to see what these studies look like when we reflect back on the year 2020 after an environment that actually instills more pain, both physically, mentally, and emotionally on all of us. So I already have been hearing studies leaking out that our suicide rates have exploded since the COVID crisis. So I don't think America is going to see anytime soon that we're going to stabilize this journey. In fact, I think it's getting worse.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this many times on the air. We're not nourishing our brains correctly. We're not finding that calm through meditation. I mean, meditation has been popularized again, but I don't know how many Americans are actually doing it and understand the benefits of it. Yeah, yeah. You say that there are seven factors that impact our longevity. Can we go down the list?
Sure. And actually, it's nine. And this is based on longevity researchers.
Okay.
You know, my idea of maybe what's enhancing it may not align with theirs, but let's start with their list, which is gender. So the current overall life expectancy of men in the U.S. is 76.4 years. Women, it's 82.9 years. So that's a pretty interesting thing. So basically, women, we live longer. And then genetics. Genetics can play a role in this, but as you and I both know, it's how we live our lives that impact our genetic expression. So we don't just say, oh, my dad died of a stroke and my grandpa died of a stroke, so therefore I'm going to die of a stroke.
Right.
We have to take some personal responsibility to change our genetic expression.
Mm-hmm.
The next one on the list is prenatal and childhood conditions. So poor, conditions in utero at birth and in early childhood are definitely associated with higher mortality rate. And even with our advances in medicine, we are still, I think, 36th worldwide in infant mortality here in the United States. So we're not, all of our amazing bells and whistle tools aren't doing a good job. But I also think it's the health of the mother and preconception care that's a problem, as well as no one talks about the impact of the ACE score, that adverse childhood event score, on the health of and well-being as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move into good old marital status. And interestingly enough, as much as I hear my colleagues and my friends joke about wanting to kill their spouses, really it shows that those who are in a long-term partnered relationship have better, living outcomes. And I think that's just the nature that you spoke to a moment ago about just community and connection. And then we look at socioeconomic status. Definitely the lower you are on that totem pole, the higher your mortality rate. And that's just lack of, you know, access to good, you know, medical care, to participate in healthier lifestyle habits. A lot of these places where we have the lower socioeconomic status also, unfortunately, is where we have a lot of food deserts. Mm-hmm. You know, and lack of nature. So nature deficit and food deficits are definitely going to have an impact here. Education, higher educated levels are linked to higher socioeconomic status, mm-hmm. and therefore higher longevity. So in theory, the studies say that the more educated you are, the lower levels of sort of high risk behaviors you might be involved in, obesity, mm-hmm. tobacco use, et cetera. But, you know, again, I'm not sure of that situation. And then ethnicity and immigrant status is pretty interesting. Those
really?
Who come from really high, you know, trauma environments, you know, really, you know, oppressive, war-riddled environments also. And I think that goes back to that stress response. And then typically that puts people into vulnerable areas of their socioeconomic status as well. Lifestyle. I'm so happy that they added this to the list because it seems like, and it's sad that it's at the bottom of the barrel, but it seems like that should be the top of the list. Our lifestyle choices, you know, historically, our lifestyles mm-hmm. of unhealthy diets, inadequate exercise, tobacco use, excess alcohol, risky behaviors, you know, workplace dangers, motor vehicle mm-hmm. safety, all of those things, you know, play a role. And then, interestingly enough, they talk about medical technology is one of the impacts on increased longevity. And yet again, what I would add is that in the United States, we are most medically technology advanced and yet have the lowest longevity. So I don't quite buy into that ninth factor, but there you have it.
Well, I think we're an over-vaccinated society. No one receives more vaccinations in the world than the USA.
Right.
We do too many surgeries. You know, you get a little, and I'm a living proof of it. Like, I have had body pain, knee pain, all kinds of stuff that I worked through by taking supplements like turmeric, you know, making sure I'm drinking enough water, getting enough rest, making sure my diet is clean. I mean, there's so many things that we can do to avoid surgery naturally and heal our body.
Yeah.
But people in America, they want everything. They want it now. You know, they want everything right now. And it does not, it's not good for us as a nation.
Right.
I mean, the numbers show it. We are the most obese nation in the world because of all the things that we do, including artificial sweeteners, you know, too much social media. I mean, you name it. We need to get the scrub brushes out and clean the decks, right?
Exactly. And that's just it. You know, you speak to sort of what's contributing in our American culture. And, you know, that sort of segues into what I'm always teaching my patients, which is about what we're putting in our bucket. You know, like, what are we contributing to that that's bringing us health or taking us away from it? And, you know, those are the 9 or the 10 factors I talk about in my book, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, which are your epigenetics, your metabolic health. So basically, how is your body burning fuel and using it to make the whole engine purr or, you know, stumble? Environmental toxins, immune system, microbiome, inflammation, circulation, circulatory systems, hormonal balance and health, stress response and circadian rhythm, you know, balance, and then the mental emotional well-being, which, as we started this conversation, despair is what is totally killing us in this country. And it is absolutely the elephant in the living room that no one wants to address.
Well, I want to know what I need to put in my bucket, but we're going to go to break and we'll be back. More coming up with Dr. Nasha Winters. She is the co-author of The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, Integrating Deep Nutrition, the Ketogenic Diet, and Non-Toxic Bio-Individualized Therapies. We will be right back. You're listening to One Life Radio.
1, 2, 3, My baby don't mess around because she loves me so.
You're listening to One Life Radio. Make sure you check out our podcast and get to know the show at oneliferadio.com.
Everybody, happy Monday. You are listening to One Life Radio. We are live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia as well as KMET in sunny Southern California on ABC News Talk. And we've got Dr. Nasha Winters on the line with us. She is a naturopathic integrative oncologist and a fellow of the American Board of Naturopathic Oncology. She has been on a personal journey with cancer for almost 29 years, and her quest to save her own life has transformed into a lifelong mission to support others on a similar journey. Dr. Nasha travels the world helping colleagues master the metabolic approach to cancer so that their patients can achieve better treatment outcomes. She is the co-author of the book, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, Integrating Deep Nutrition, the Ketogenic Diet, and Non-Toxic Bio-Individualized Therapies. Her website is drnasha.com. That's drnasha.com. It's drnasha.com. Always a pleasure. Right before the break, we were talking about what to put in our bucket. What do we need to put in our mitochondrial bucket and why it is so important for longevity? Let's hear it, Dr. Nasha.
Absolutely, absolutely. We kind of alluded to the 5 drops or the 10 drops in that bucket before the break. So a couple simple strategies that are basically available to all of us for little or no cost are things like really start to understand where you came from. Know your family of origin. Know what patterns and trends are there so you can start to educate and empower yourself to let the buck stop with you. If everyone's had cancer or diabetes or cardiovascular disease, stop it with your generation and that downstream. That's the epigenetic piece.
Yeah.
The other piece here. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I read this blog of yours about we're not born with cancer. You turn it on. And it was written by you, of course, the metabolic approach to cancer with Dr. Nasha Winters. And I found it so fascinating. I just had to say that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it because it is. It's like we're kind of told that it's just a genetic Russian roulette and we don't have any chance or say in the matter. And in fact, that happens less than 5% of the time. 95% of the time, we are empowered to turn on or off those switches at will. And so much of that depends on the other 9 things we dump into that bucket. And that includes what we eat or the timing.
Absolutely.
Right? That's a huge one. And in fact, a study came out 2 years ago. Your listeners will appreciate this. Less than 12% of Americans are metabolically healthy. And what that means, in fact, the headline underneath that study says, trends help sound the alarm for efforts to lower associated risks of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and other complications. This study was 2 years ago. And here we are dealing with COVID and other crises that are 100%, you know, the people who have problems with this condition are the metabolically unsound, which means that 88% of us are vulnerable. So it's time to clean up your bucket.
Your body cannot function well with all that fat. It just can't. Even vaccines don't work as well if you're obese.
Exactly.
I mean, if you've got COVID 100%. It's all related. And And it is about metabolic health. It's not about the weight on the scale. It's how you feel. Exactly. It's your energy level. It's all these things that matter to give you a good quality life.
100%. And, you know, that you're talking about the vaccine, trying to vaccine ourselves back to health is it's ridiculous, you know? It's like, let me poison you back to health here. And that leads into the toxicity piece. What we put in, on, and around us at any given moment, from body care products to medications to spraying our food, you know, our food processes out there, our crops, that is contributing to the health and vitality. So you want to learn what you're putting in, on, and around your body, be a savvy consumer, and change the course of that. Anything you put in and on around you is also going to affect your microbiome. So you want to diversify your diet. You want to increase the fiber. You want to eat real food, nutrient-dense food. You want to avoid the factory farmed foods that are riddled with antibiotics that will destroy your microbiome further, which then also, if you destroy your microbiome, you destroy your immune system.
Yeah.
Now we're kind of in this immune crisis. And really, it's because when we're obese, our vitamin D levels are lower. When you're eating crappy food and taking antibiotics or lots of pharmaceuticals, your fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A and D, which are critical for your immune function, is depleted. So things like getting, and people have then, of course, been terrified of the sunshine for the last 40 years, which is really ironic as well. So it's like vitamin D3, vitamin A, vitamin C, zinc, reishi. These are our nutrient-dense, you know, foods that used to be in our food sources that are now very limited. And then the way we're raising the food and what's going on in our microbiome prevents them from that. And then those things lead to inflammation and poor circulation and hormone imbalance. So things like exercise, breath work, moonwalking, getting your body back into the rhythm of the cycles around you, which regulates your pituitary, your pineal gland, your melatonin levels, which is your biggest antioxidant, as well as impacts your hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis and your gonadal, you know, function, your sex hormone function, to be in rhythm of what's in, on, and around you as well. Wow. And then the two biggies, my gosh, probably the most, are stress and the circadian rhythm process. So all that blue light, all of that watching screens late at night, all the EMFs that are bouncing around us that we can't avoid right now, as well as the emotional trauma we keep talking about again and again, that's definitely affecting our longevity. These are the things that must be addressed. You can't just put them in a box or give them an injection and call it good. It's got to be dealt with.
Well, and it's easy to get off that, you know, that health train, if you will. I mean, I do it myself from time to time. I just started my gong over the last 5 days, and you're like, what is that? Okay, so I read this book recently called Focus by Pedram Shoja. He was on the show. He was on the show last week, and he talked about your gong. Anything that you want to, you know, change your life with, and you do it for 100 days. If you miss a day, then you got to start over. So basically, my gong is at least 15 minutes of exercise every day, at least 15 minutes of meditation, and at least, you know, I don't have the ounces down yet, but lots of water every day, because those three things, just those three things, can be game changers in your overall health. Agreed?
Yes. Yeah. And yes. And look, they're all free. They're all available to you no matter what environment you're living in. You know, and that's just the key it's a funny thing. We know what we need to do for ourselves on some level. It's very intuitive. And yet we find so many distractions to keep us from doing just that.
Well, yeah. And you said diet. I think diet is probably, I put that on the list. It's like I'm almost the number one thing that is a total game changer. You know, I'm half Italian, and so is Junior, by the way. So we and his wife's Italian, too. So we love the Mediterranean diet here at One Life Radio. But, you know, and so this way of eating, though, is so effective for longevity. So, you know, can you talk about that a little bit, about the Mediterranean diet and why it's so important to at least consider it the way that we should all eat, basically?
I love it. Well, and it's interesting because we've been learning, where we kind of were like, it's what they're eating. What we're actually starting to learn more about the Mediterranean diet and these blue zones, which are zones where people live into their hundreds more densely than in other parts of the world. But what we're finding is it's almost like the when, not what, and with whom is the key ingredient to this. And so what that means, though, is also when you look at the commonalities of the Mediterranean diet and the blue zones, is that they tend to be coastal. So that insinuates a more temperate climate, that insinuates more sunshine, probably more outdoor time, the negative ions of the ocean. It's like a giant Epsom salt bath at your very disposal. Every Greek and Italian I know living in the Adriatic Mediterranean area are taking cold plunges throughout the winter, even in well into their 90s. So they're immersing themselves in that beautiful blue water. There's also massive amounts of like fish intake and all the omega-3s and the olive oil and the things that are just dense in nature from the food standpoint.
Right.
You also exercise daily. You're walking everywhere. They don't get in a car and drive 2 blocks to go to the store. You know, it's a whole different thing. And the other side of it is they are in many of those regions, they're also very spiritually inclined. And especially in that part of the world, it's a very Greek Orthodox Christian belief system, which in fact leads to almost 200 days a year of fasting to some degree. You know, fasting is literally anything over 4 hours, but it can be, you know, alternating day fasting. It can be just eating between sunrise, sunset. It can be just eating, you know, in a short window every day, but they employ that in their daily routine up to 200 times a year. And when you see that, that's that concept of maybe it's not as much as what, but when.
Oh, yeah.
And then the piece that I talk about is sort of my own version of the CDC. We have the version in the U.S. called the Center for Disease Control. My Center for Disease Control is based around circadian rhythm, diet, and community. And guess what? Those are also the components that relate to the longevity statistics we talked about earlier, but also tend to be very related to the Mediterranean lifestyle and the blue zone lifestyle. It's like when they're eating and being out in the sunshine and, you know, napping when their body needs to rest. You know, the siestas are very part of that culture as well. The diet is very real, local, seasonal, pure, super clean. The community is just at the heart and soul of it. And they're, you know, thrive among sharing meals together and celebrating together around food. And so it really is something we've gotten away from. We now enjoy our food behind the wheel of our car that we got through a drive-through, going 100 miles an hour down the freeway. That is the world that we live in today, and that is such a vast difference compared to our Mediterranean brothers and sisters.
Right. Well, and it's just a lifestyle, and that was one of the things that you pointed out in earlier in the show. But you know, I think of my grandmother, Genevra Speziani Fiaschetti. She was just a little Italian. And she walked 2 miles every single day. You know, she was known to have a beer in her purse once in a while. But she ate like a ton of vegetables. I mean, we grew up on salad and pasta, basically, and maybe meat once a week. And even though we were not on the coast, we were in upstate New York. But I mean, she lived to be 99 years old, Naysha. I might add, and no vaccines whatsoever. Wow. So, you know, it makes you question what we are doing in the world today. Like, what? Yep. This is not the correct picture of health. How we are, the way we are running things, especially in America. It's just no way to live.
Yeah. But exactly.
We've got, we're out of time. I got to go.
Well, there you go. Well, get on, get out there and get the ball on. I love that.
You'll have to come back sooner rather than later. It was far too long since the last time you've been on the show. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
You too. All the best, everyone. Take care.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And Dr. Naysha, she's wonderful. You guys, her book is great and her story is great. The Metabolic Approach to Cancer. Her website is drnaysha.com. We will be right back with another great guest, Dr. Stephen Schwartz. We're going to be getting a COVID update with Dr. Schwartz. So stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Find us on Facebook, hit like, and follow us at One Life Radio.
Oh man, I never get sick of that song. That's a really awesome song from I don't even know what year, but a little superstitious. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior on the controls, and we've got Dr. Stephen Schwartz on the line. He is a recognized physician, researcher, inventor, and entrepreneur. He is currently the day hospitalist at a U.S. military hospital in the Midwest, overseeing patient care, teaching, research, and leadership related to hospital medicine. As the chief medical officer of Flunata International and STS Health, he patented Flunata, a holistic health formulation made to combat multiple strains of influenza and the common cold. You can find Flunata at stshealth.com. That's stshealth.com. Dr. Schwartz, always great to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm good. I'm having trouble keeping up with President Trump, though, you know.
Well, let's talk about him.
So as we all know, the president was diagnosed with COVID last week, and then he got out of the hospital late last night. I was on the phone with a friend, and I got an email came through, and I was like, oh, my gosh. I saw, you know, an image of him waving, leaving the medical hospital that he's at in Washington. And so what's going on? Have you heard any updates?
Well, I think we can speculate based on what we know. What we know when he came into the hospital is that he had a fever, he had cough, and he had fatigue. Three of the hallmark signs and symptoms of COVID. Mm-hmm. They did not mention shortness of breath. That's actually important. I'm not sure that they would mention every symptom that he had. But I can tell you from my experience, when a patient is short of breath, just climbing one flight of stairs, mm-hmm. that usually means that it's in the lungs in a serious manner.
Well, and he's male, and he's a little overweight, and so he's in that high-risk group, right?
He's absolutely in the high-risk group, yes. And what we know is that he was put on three treatments. One was an antibody, one was remdesivir, and the other is dexamethasone, which is a steroid.
Oh, wow. And what do you think about that protocol? As a medical doctor, Duke trained, I mean, you're one of the best out there. You've actually served on the pandemic, not this time around, but you were on the committee back in, what, 2016, I believe, right? Or 2014?
Absolutely, yes. So of those three treatments, the second two we use all the time. The first one actually is experimental. It's not yet even approved by the FDA. As I understand it, it's in stage three trial. So stage three is the final trial before it can be approved. But I don't think it even completed stage three yet. So Basically what that is, it's an antibody. It's a kind of a synthetic antibody against the virus. And the idea is, you and I, if we get the COVID, it takes us really 2 to 3 weeks to make antibodies. But if you wanted to shorten it up, you can give antibodies a little early, say, let's say in his case at day four. And so that basically will speed up the process. Mm-hmm. And the idea is the antibodies will attack the COVID virus around it and allow his immune system to start reducing the viral count, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
in regard to the other two treatments, remdesivir is a pretty standard treatment that's used now. It's used for any hospitalized patient, and that's a 5-day protocol. It's given intravenous, it generally has shown to have a pretty decent positive effect in terms of getting rid of the virus.
Wow.
And then the third one is dexamethasone, which is a steroid. And that's fundamentally given to reduce inflammation because In many situations with the COVID, it creates so much inflammation that the body sometimes overreacts. And it's also been shown to improve survival using the dexamethasone steroid.
And is the dexamethasone, is that the one that's still in stage three approval with the FDA? So it's not for it's not out for, you know, the general public yet, right? It's not available?
No, that's the one that's actually, that's the one that's actually been approved, dexamethasone. Oh, wow. And remdesivir. It's the first one, which is the antibody treatment that is experimental.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I think he received one dose of that, and that was about 3 or 4 days ago.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think he's, at least I didn't hear that he's continuing to get that.
Yeah. What, you know, you said about fever being one of the symptoms, you know, of COVID and fatigue. And what was the other one? What was the third one? Fever?
Cough.
That, duh. Yeah. That's like the three combined. But do you know if they brought his fever down when they put him in the hospital, or did they let it do the natural thing? Because it seems so counterintuitive. It just blows my mind that if someone's got a virus that they try to bring the fever down.
Well, I don't know how high his temperature was, but what I can say is this. Anybody over 60, especially 65, that has a fever, say over 101, that's actually very significant because, mm-hmm. as we all kind of know or intuitively realize, older people don't have as much of a fever response.
Yeah.
So when they do, it's actually very significant. And it means the virus is fairly well entrenched to create that response. And the body produces interferon, which is a kind of a protein that causes, basically shuts the virus down, but mm-hmm. it also shuts the body down. And that's why you get fatigue with flu, mm-hmm. severe fatigue. In fact, that's influenza. That's the interferon that's being produced. And it basically shuts down the reproduction mechanism in the cell so you don't start to reproduce the viruses. But feel terrible because of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I still think I had COVID back a couple of months ago. I was around someone that had it, and I did. I really do think I did. And I persevered through it. I did not bring my fever down. I don't know how high my fever got because I couldn't even get a thermometer, and I didn't have one in my house. I need to get one. I forgot about it. But, you know, doesn't the human body, have a natural mechanism where it will only go above, I believe, like 106.3 or something like that, unless the heat is induced from like an outside source, like an external heat source?
That's correct. That's right.
And so should you or should you not bring the fever down?
Well, it's a two-edged sword. I think that if you have a mild fever and you're comfortable living with it, there are a number of viruses that do not replicate nearly as well at high temperatures. Mm-hmm. And so there is an advantage to having that fever. That being said, having seen many people with fevers of 103, 104 in the hospital, people just feel horrible. They just don't feel good at all. And when you get the fever down, they feel better. The other thing is they sweat profusely, and they're prone to get dehydrated. Uh-huh. So there's an advantage to getting the fever down in that respect as well. So I think it's a matter of degree of low to mid-range fevers you mm-hmm. can kind of live with, and sometimes that will help slow the virus down. Most viruses, really high fevers, I don't think so. I think those should be controlled.
But wasn't there, and we've got to go to break here in a second, but wasn't there some sort of controversy over bringing a fever down with ibuprofen or Tylenol, one of the two, or maybe both of them, that there was some sort of conflict of interest, if you will, to the immune system about bringing the fever down with those products instead of naturally, like a cool bath or cool towels on the forehead? You know, all the old-fashioned things that people used to do to bring the fever down. Was there something? I'm remembering hearing
something.
Well,
yes, something. For the COVID, there was the French that basically raised to light using ibuprofen, and they felt that people that were on ibuprofen had much poorer results. I think that, you know, the thing about the ibuprofen, it does low the fever, but it also affects the immune system, and it affects the pathways that the immune system chooses.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's been fully studied, but what we do know is aspirin, for example, aspirin used in flu, we know that is not.
Oh, the line just dropped. Let me try to get him back on. Yeah.
Well, you know what? We got to go to break anyway, so that was perfect.
Okay, yeah. I'll call him back when we get in commercials.
We'll be right back.
Down the street with the brim pool way down low. with the sound of his feet. Machine guns ready to go. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? Out of the doorway, the bullets rip to the sound of the beat, yeah. Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust, hey. Hey, gonna get you too. Another one bites the dust.
You're listening to One Life Radio. Make sure you check out our podcast and get to know the show at oneliferadio.com.
Turn it up.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior and Dr. Stephen Schwartz. We are live here in Dallas, Texas, and it's always great to have Dr. Schwartz on the show. We're getting an update from for COVID-19 developments and research findings. Okay, so Dr. Schwartz, the last time you were on, you spoke about seven things that can help our immune system to fight COVID-19. Can we go over those again real quick for our listeners?
Yes, we can. The seven are BMD, ZCS, licorice, and Flunada. Those are I call it the 7+1.
Okay, so the B, what did you say?
BMD.
BMV, okay. And what's the other one?
That's B12, magnesium, okay. Vitamin D.
Okay.
Those have actually been shown in studies to be useful in the treatment of COVID. As outpatient and prevent, and also early inpatient in mild disease and improves survival. B12, magnesium, and vitamin D.
Okay.
The others are ZCS, zinc, vitamin C, and selenium.
Ah, that's right. And
zinc can be useful to prevent entry of the COVID into the cell. It's not been proven. C has not been proven in COVID, but they're generally useful. Selenium has been shown to be useful against COVID in the lab, in that the COVID does not grow as well when selenium is present. And you can get enough selenium in just 1 to 2 Brazil nuts.
Yeah, I bought some over the weekend. I did. So, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. I gave somebody some Brazil nuts and said, here, just take 1 to 2 a day. And gave them a half a bag, almost a pound, and saw them about 4 days later, and they'd finished the whole bag.
Well, what's funny is I didn't know this. I read a lot, but one of the things that I discovered is that you know if you're low in zinc, if you lose your sense of smell or taste. Did you know that? And so it only makes sense when your body is utilizing all that zinc to fight COVID-19 that that's one of the symptoms as well. No taste or loss of smell or taste, but that's also a zinc deficiency as well.
That's absolute. And not only that, I think there's a theory, and we are we check zinc levels in patients with COVID that lose their sense of taste or smell, and I believe the ones that do are the ones that are relatively zinc deficient.
Yeah.
Myself, that's what I believe.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Any other treatments or preventative being looked at? What about licorice tea? I know that you mentioned licorice on the show before. Can we talk about that?
Yes, licorice has been shown to be effective against the SARS-CoV-1. And interestingly enough, if you look at the genetic footprint of COVID-19, which is the SARS-CoV-2, there's an 80% similarity in the genetics to SARS-CoV-1. So naturally, people looked at what was effective against SARS-CoV-1, and a lot of research had been done. And one of the ingredients of licorice, glycyrrhenic acid, have been shown to be effective. Since that time, a number of people have been using it, but there was actually a study that looked at families that used licorice tea, and they looked at the number of family members that actually came down with COVID versus families that did not use, and they actually did find the difference. Since that time, licorice has taken off.
Oh, yeah.
Because that report has obviously hit the media, and people are looking for anything to help.
Oh, yeah. No, I went to Sprouts and got some licorice. I got like licorice drops, like a tincture, you know? Also, yes. Mullein. Do you know anything about mullein? I've used that for years because I've had pneumonia several times, and so I kind of have weak lungs. And whenever I start to feel, you know, a little green around the gills, I'll take my mullein and like some tea, and it really does help me to get well. One of the things that I use, I keep it in my medicine chest.
Tell me more. How do you use it?
Well, I just put it in my tea, but, you know, I read about it several years ago, and I just, you know, and with my kids, too, anytime they got sick and they know, the mullein, and it's just, it's a tincture from a tree leaf, I believe, and I just put it in tea, or you can just put it right in water and you drink it. But it's funny because it has kind of a licorice-ish taste, if you will. You know, it reminds me of licorice, except not as strong.
Well, maybe it has that same ingredient in it, the glycerinic acid.
Yeah, it may. I'll have to Google it.
Yeah, and I will say one thing about licorice from a medical point of view. If you do have high blood pressure, you should not take it. And like anything, moderation is key. So don't overdo it, whatever you do.
Yes. And I'm one that tends to do that. The music's just started playing. I don't know if you can hear it, Dr. Schwartz, but doggone it, we're out of time. I hate that. You're going to have to call back sooner rather than later. So many good guests on the show lately. I just can't fit everybody in, but always great to have you on the show. And everyone out there, Flunada is amazing. Go to stshealth.com. It's something I always have in my medicine arsenal, my medicine chest. Everyone, I got to kick the ball. You get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Everyone, have a great day.